welcome to another episode of the 343 podcast. What follows is a live stream that we did on YouTube just after the quarterfinals ended and before the World Cup semifinals are about to begin. So even though there's a lot of current event talk there, everything that we discuss is a gold nugget. Everything that we discuss is timeless, is evergreen. So whether it be a current event or not, that is what we do here at the 343 podcast. We analyze what happened and we analyze what might happen later with the semifinals. And of course, we take your Q&A since it was a live stream once again at YouTube. And I encourage all of you guys who are not on YouTube, head on over there to the 343 channel, subscribe, like, share with your friends, especially if you believe that we are change agents or we want to change here things for the better. Because that's the only way it's going to change, guys. If we support each other, if we support change agents, we have to stop supporting the establishment. We have to start amplifying the voices of change. And mind you, we don't just do that through media and content creation. We also offer premium and free coaching education services at 343coaching.com. And it's not just us compiling stuff from the ether. No, we've lived, breathed, coached for over 20 years and done remarkable work, pioneering work here in the United States. So if you're in the U.S., especially if you're in the U.S., head on over to 343coaching.com because we've lived it, done it. And you don't have to go through the entire trial and error cycle that we did. You can short circuit the entire system. You can short circuit your learning curve and execute on a proven methodology. Parents, very similarly with you, I know that you're not coaching your kids on the field, but you're coaching them off the field. And for you, we've codified everything and all our lessons learned at every age group, both genders, up to and even including professional soccer players. So we've seen it all, and we've prepared something special for you at 343masterclass.com. That's 343masterclass.com for you parents. And last but certainly not least, if you're a coach coaching in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7coaching.com. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoy this live stream that we had on YouTube. Here we go.
All right, everybody, we are live. Happy Sunday. Good afternoon. Gary, how are you doing today? Another Argentina win for you to celebrate, and you get to enjoy at least one more game for sure of Messi's brilliance. So how are you feeling after last night?
Tell me if you feel the same thing, Benny. I am actually physically exhausted. Remember when we had like a day of no games just a few days ago before these quarterfinal games? We had no World Cup matches. I didn't feel healthy. I don't know. I just felt exhausted, just tired. I just didn't want to do anything. And I'm feeling the same way today. And obviously, a contributing factor is Argentina. So we can talk as much Argentina as you'd like. I think those who believe we know a little something about football could maybe gather some insight that I might have with respect to Argentina. But you take it wherever you want to take it.
No, with respect to the tiredness, I think it hit me a little bit sooner than it did for you. I think it was like going into the first knockout games, maybe the second or third day of the knockout games. And I just realized like, fuck, man, I've been neglecting my girl, been neglecting my kid. I need to take one day off from soccer, from football, you know? So thankfully that one day, it made me like, oh, fuck, I need to watch it again tomorrow, you know? So,
yeah.
But now what is there? Only four more games left, right? The semifinals and then the final and then the third place game. So wrapping up there. Let's start with Argentina, Gary, and just your thoughts on the game. To me, it looked like, I'm never going to say that Messi wasn't trying. I know he was trying. I know he wants to win. But I think the way that Messi played yesterday, he wanted to let his teammates shine. I think he's tired of hearing, oh, it's rigged for Messi. It's rigged for Messi. And you saw that in the way that he played yesterday. It was more of setting his teammates up to score. Not to say that he didn't go to goal himself and try and score, but it just seemed more like, let's see what my teammates can do here. I'm going to help these guys out and set them up. What did you think, Gary?
I think that he is 39 years old and Switzerland is physically very, very strong, very good. And he just couldn't do what he normally does.
Yeah.
So you saw him try to take a guy on or two once in a while and try to make a cutback or something and he'd get jacked, right? Or he'd get muscled off it. And I just think it's because he's 39. And I think that Switzerland did a very good job on him and all of Argentina. So that's my opinion on that topic. You want me to keep going on the whole game or?
Yeah, keep going on the whole game here.
Yeah. So while the game was going on yesterday, and I already kind of had this thought after Egypt, but now it's kind of confirmed to me. this Argentina team feels just like Argentina in 1990. So in 1986, Argentina won the World Cup. They did it very well, merited it. And then in 1990, Ben, it was basically not the same team, but you still had Maradona there leading the whole thing. And you're barely squeaking by all the matches. In 1990, Argentina barely got out of the group phase. I think they won one, drew one, and lost one. Then they played Brazil in the round of 16. And I was at my grandma's house in Argentina, in Rosario, during that match by myself, watching the game on a little television set. And nobody was in the streets. I just remember it very vividly. But Brazil played them off the park, Benny, like hit the crossbar, hit the post like five times, just a complete massacre annihilation. But Maradona got the ball, you know, he dribbled up midfield, he gave a pass to Claudio Canigia, Canigia scored, and just like one of their only ever attacks, and they win and they're through. And then in the next round, the quarterfinals, same shit. They had to go to PKs to advance. And then in the semifinal, same shit. They had to go to PKs and advance, but always being kind of like the inferior team, not convincing anybody. And then in the final, obviously, they lost with a outrageously questionable referee and PK. But I'm getting those vibes, right? Argentina 2022 merited it. One could easily say they were the best team. And this time around, they're not the best team by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I think Switzerland was better than them, is better than them. And Argentina showed signs of being a small team. And what I mean by a small team in South America, in Argentina, we talk about equipos grandes y equipos chicos, okay? So what a small team does that is overpowered and inferior and is a B-level team like the US or C or whatever, maybe you get a lucky goal, maybe off a corner and you head it in, you're like, oh shit, we fucking scored. Holy crap, this is crazy. And then you get back into a little shell and play with fear, and you don't want to give up that 1-0 lead. You don't go and attack. You don't try to dominate possession. You don't try to do these things. And that's what Argentina did. It felt like they scored, and they're like, oh, man, like, let's be careful now. That's not the sign of a big team, Ben. So those are my sentiments, and I'll leave it there. You can ask whatever it is you want. The audience can ask whatever they want, and then we can move on to maybe the England match, yeah, if you want. Sure.
Lots to talk about on that game, but was there any moments in last night's game, Gary, when you felt, fuck, like Switzerland could actually come and beat us or not? Because to me, it felt like the previous games, like Egypt goes up two, it's like, fuck, Argentina's chances over. I never felt last night that Argentina was like, or Switzerland was the dominant opponent, and I thought that Argentina was bossing the game. Personally, you know,
well, I put my money where my mouth is, and I told everybody, I tell you that I'm not a gambler. I don't gamble. Okay. Once in a while, if I happen to find myself in Vegas, maybe I'll go to a poker table, and maximum, if I lose like $100, I'm like, that's it. I'm done. I don't gamble. And yesterday, Argentina went up 1-0. And then I saw the next 5 minutes and I said, I'm betting on Switzerland to win right now. These are great odds. Like Switzerland's chances of winning were like 10%. On these exchanges. And I'm like, absolutely, Switzerland's winning this game. And I can show you the receipts if you want.
All right, let's move on to, we'll talk a little bit more about Argentina when we talk about the semifinal, but England, Norway. Norway had a good tournament, man. My prediction was right. I said that they'll eliminate a contender. They're not going to win the World Cup, but sure enough, they beat Brazil. I felt they had moments yesterday to beat England, but England came out with the win. Let's get your overall reactions on the game, and then we'll get into Tuchel's comments after the game.
Yeah, overall reaction is England is better. I think Jude Bellingham, for me, I've been feeling this for a while now. I'm just going to say, I think he's the best player in the world. I think Jude Bellingham is the best player in the world. And people, it's just different, right? Best is always relative, like, because player profiles are different, you know? Mbappe is not the same type of player as Jude. They play different positions. They have different styles. They have different attributes, so on and so forth. But I think Jude is such a complete player and a difference maker on a world-class level in every category, that for me, it makes him the best player in the world. So my impressions were England are better. Norway was Norway. Just it seemed like way too Holland dependent, and Holland didn't do dick. He just stood up there, wasn't even pressuring, wasn't anything. And there was a moment in the game where Odegaard tried to give a filtered ball, not a filtered ball. Like Odegaard was dribbling out of bounds. He's being pressed out of bounds and he cracked a ball, a 30-yard ball on the ground toward where Haaland was, but Haaland wasn't there. And then he ran out of bounds where his bench was. And I saw him like yell at the bench, yell at the coaches and point like where Haaland is at. And I'm like, I wonder if this guy's telling the coaching staff, get that guy off the field. I swear to God, I had that sensation. And they pulled them. They pulled Haaland off the field. And in many respects, people had a cow and they have a point. Like, how are you going to take Haaland off the field? You live or die by that guy. But I think he was hurting Norway. Like, Norway plays with 10 men, basically. That you defend with 10 men and you play with 10 men. And hopefully you can get the ball on Haaland's foot or his head and he scores a goal. But you play with 10, Benny.
Why do you think it was that Haaland was playing like that? Like, I mean, like when I watch him off the ball, obviously it looks like he's not engaged in it, but I think that's a way of like luring in the defender to make him feel like they're asleep. But again, yeah, like you just said, his defensive qualities, he didn't press, he wasn't doing much. So why do you think he was playing?
I don't know, Benny. I was going to make another point and I forgot it, but I don't know why Haaland was what he was.
Let's get into, well, first of all, this guy says, give the cable a jersey. Did the ball hit the cable, Gary? Does that matter? Do you know what you're talking about?
I don't know. And I'm not the type of person who looks deep into those things. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of replays and slow motion and people are zooming in. Did it hit? Did it not hit? Did the ball rotate? Did it not rotate? But I don't spend an abundance or any time really putting those things under the microscope because I just don't care that much. But, oh, this is what I was going to say. In one respect, I'm happy that England won, in that if Norway had won, they would be like, ah, see, it's rigged for Messi, so he doesn't have to play England. He has to play Norway. It would be all that shit all over again.
My only thing with the ball touching the camera,
yeah,
is like if they're going to bring the sensor out for the Croatia goal and see that, hey, it touched his hair, why aren't they doing the same thing with England? So
it's a good question.
What the fuck?
It's a good question. Well, we're all presuming that there was something that occurred.
Yeah. None of us will ever really know because sure, like people start posting videos of the camera angles and they're like, look, see, it drops. You don't know if it actually did touch or not, but where's the sensor? Why aren't they showing us that chart like they did?
That's true. They could come out and just squash all the bullshit by saying, hey, here's all the sensor data. Nothing happened.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into my favorite part of the game. Tuchel's comments after the game with the reporter. I'm going to play the video for the audience.
You've talked about your team suffering before. Today, how do you sum up what the team have found?
I didn't talk about suffering. I never talked about suffering. We made life very, very difficult for ourselves today. The result is fantastic. We're in the last four. It's amazing, but not happy with the performance.
In what sense?
In every sense. Again, the commitment is there, but we made life very, very difficult for us in the way we played, how we played. Sloppy, a lot of technical mistakes, not fast enough, not repetitive enough. We were lucky today.
Was that the occasion, getting to the players?
I don't know, it's just...
It's mentality thing?
No, nothing. No, it's not mentality.
Well, if you're not happy with the players...
This is pure mentality. How can you ask about mentality now? This is pure mentality. It's not about mentality.
No, I mean, when the players had the problem, was that the mentality? What was it?
There's no mentality problem.
Fucking legend, bro.
I love it.
Real manager right there.
I love it. Real manager. And many of the Germans are like that. At least that's been my experience, personal and from afar. And yeah, man, like the performance is shocking. England's not showing incredible performances, especially not against, they didn't show it against Norway. And I remember one specific action where, I don't know if you remember, Benny, first half and the first 15 minutes or so, things didn't look great. And England had a throw in, bottom left corner, and the guy throws it in, I forget who it was, and it goes out of bounds. He throws it out for a goal kick. And then it happens again 5 minutes later. Same sort of thing, throws it out of bounds. And Tuchel goes ape shit on the touchline saying, that's twice, that's two times, you know, like saying, what the fuck are you people doing? Are you retarded? That's not, you know what I mean? That's just bad execution. So the performance was shit. you rarely get a manager to give you true insight. They're always telling you what you want to hear. They're always telling you the same sort of responses for the media, for the fans. They're always very diplomatic. And here's an instance where you get to see what the guy actually believes. And you also get to see that the reporter, the guy, bless his heart, maybe he's a good guy, whatever, he's not up to the challenge because he doesn't understand football. He's like, well, was it the mentality? He's like, what are you talking about? Mentality is what won us the game. Tuchel didn't say that, but that's what Tuchel is telling the guy that doing the interview. Mentality is what won us the game, you dumbass. This is pure mentality, he's saying. He's like, oh, but was it the mentality, you know, that gave you the poor performance? What the fuck are you talking about?
Crazy, man. I don't know if you saw Jude Bellingham's comments after, right? Mm-hmm. They said like, oh, like Tuchel just said you guys didn't have the best performance. And Bellingham goes on to say like, oh, well, maybe, you know, he doesn't know how to play in these conditions. But then fast forward again, Tuchel's in the official press conference. And then they ask him, hey, Bellingham just said, you know, he doesn't agree with what you said. He thinks everybody had a good shift. And that's where Tuchel goes, yeah, they did have a good shift. I'm not taking that away from them, but I'm a football manager. If I see something that's I don't like with my team, then yeah, we're going to get better. We're going to fix it with that. And I think a lot of people here in the States, especially USMNT fans and all those type of people, they have a difficult time hearing hard truths, Gary. Like if Pochettino were to come out and say that after the game, let's say the US beats Belgium, but Pochettino makes the same exact statements, they would be crucifying him in the media. What are you talking about, Pochettino? Your guys just made it to the semifinal. This is historic. They would be crucifying him, Gary.
Totally.
People can't hear the truth here, man.
Totally. Well, you know, they have this philosophy here about never throw your players under the bus, keep that sort of stuff in the locker room. Okay, I understand all of that, and I understand the benefits of keeping that stuff in the locker room and never talking about your players or the performance. By the way, he never singled out a player, Tuchel. He said generally the performance of the team is not good or was not good. If the problem with that sort of philosophy and demanding that of people in charge is that you never get to hear the truth then. You are asking the people in charge, the people who actually know things, and it could be in football or anything else, to lie to you, to sugarcoat things, to not tell you the truth. So here's an instance where the guy is not lying to you. He's telling you what he's thinking, and you slam him for it. You should be saying, wow, amazing, some transparency, incredible. And same with Jude coming out and saying, well, Tuchel probably has never played in these sorts of games before. He's never played against, he's probably criticizing him as a player, Benny. He's never played against Haaland. He's never played against Odegaard himself as a player in those situations, which is fine. Look, you're gaining some insight from a world-class player.
Yeah, and the media is probably going to try and spin it to where it's like, oh, now Bellingham and Tuchel are upset at each other and there's going to be all this drama. But no, it's not like that, bro.
Have you looked up the stats or the facts? I am a data guy. I'm a trained physicist and mathematician. Of course, I'm a data guy. But in soccer, I think the data is all horseshit and bullshit and just talking points for fan and media fodder and all that stuff. But I'm curious, have you looked? Obviously, England won the World Cup in 1966 when it was in England and they were at home. But I think Tuchel has gotten them the furthest since I don't even know when. When's the last time England went to a semifinal? So you have to give credit to this guy. And, you know, the silver lining, if England were to beat Argentina, at least maybe partially some of this narrative about a country whose manager is a foreigner, has never won the World Cup and stuff like that can start, I don't know, going a little bit by the wayside. It's a bullshit narrative.
Yeah, I'm glad that Tuchel's having the success that he had. I was going to bring that point up too. It's like everybody keeps saying, oh, Pochettino's not American, so he doesn't really know the American player pool. Well, Tuchel's not British. He's not from England.
Yeah, sure. but they'll say that Tuchel coaches in England, has been coaching in England forever, and knows England and blah, 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 blah. No, it's all of that nonsense has to be debunked at some point, hopefully. It's just going to take a long time, and we're up against a media machine that keeps inventing bullshit.
Yeah. All right, Gary, I want to get into a few USMNT stuff. I'm sure you saw Jermaine Jones' comment. I'm going to put it on the screen. I'll read it off for everybody. It's a little bit long, but it's really important for everybody to understand. This is from Jermaine Jones, guys, former USMNT player. He says, I know nobody wants to hear this, but this is where the real failure lies. Blaming Pochettino or the players is too easy for me. Look back at what has happened. People like Ernie Sturt and Matt Crocker have stepped away from their roles, and we move on as if nothing happened. The real problems run much deeper. I can only speak from my own experience. There are people within the Federation who should have never been put in positions of power. One of them is Cindy Parlow-Cohn. Years ago, Ernie Sturt asked if I would be interested in coaching the U16 national team and assisting with the U20 national team. We agreed, and I was excited about the opportunity. But Cindy never signed the paperwork. Ernie told me he couldn't move forward without her signature. Later, this is very important, guys. Later, I was advised not to talk about it because I would never get another opportunity if I did. If you're wondering why I'm talking about it now, it's because I'm back in Germany. Let me be clear. I don't like working with people who put their own interests ahead of what's best for the development while claiming they're acting in its best interests. This is just one story. I could go much deeper on this topic because, in my opinion, this is the real reason we continue to fail. There are too many issues within the Federation that people don't know. I'm just going to leave that there for you, Gary, and you just rip on whatever you want to.
Yeah. Let me read the most important passage, which you emphasized also. The most important passage, most insight that people need to understand is when he says, later, I was advised not to talk about it because I would never get another opportunity if I did. How long, Benny, have I been telling the audience, telling you, telling everybody about that very fact, that that is how this mafia works, that that is how this monopoly works forever, forever. And to this day, I haven't revealed very much in the way of specifics, okay? Because there's still a gun to my head. And look, Jermaine is actually kind of confessing it. How long has it been since this transpired? It's been years since this occurred, Benny. And only now he's coming out. And only now, because he's probably come to the conclusion that, yeah, I am blackballed. They're not going to give me an opportunity ever again. So I'm going to move to Germany and work there because I can't work here. They don't let me work here. I have no livelihood here. Crucial for people to understand. And crucial for people to understand when I talk about the MLS monopoly and how it is a cancer and how it's the worst thing ever, that it's not about necessarily the sporting side of the equation. The sporting side of the equation is secondary. Yeah, I could give a fuck if the US men's national team won a World Cup. That doesn't solve this problem. In fact, it reinforces this problem. If the U.S. men's national team does very well on the international stage, it gives these corrupt fucks more power to do this to people. That's the problem.
When you say you still have a gun to your head, Gary, what do you mean by that?
Well, Ben, look, I'll say it again. How do they get away with this? They're a monopoly. So if you ever want to work in this space, in a certain capacity, you have to align yourself with the monopoly, or at the very least, shut your fucking mouth about what's really going on. And it's no secret, I have family member who works in the sphere. So even if I don't want to work in MLS or US soccer, that whole fucking mafia, it doesn't matter. I have a sword of Damocles hanging over my head. So if you want to know, Gary, give us specifics, air out all the dirty laundry, blah, blah. Hey, in due course, in due time. But you know what's more important than one person like Jermaine or one person like me or one person like Eric Winalda or one person of the thousands of people or God knows how many communities they've screwed over and youth clubs that they have screwed over? Maybe we can get into that one day, how youth clubs who aren't blessed with MLS Next are run out of business, run out of town, and systematically destroyed. And the people who run it are systematically destroyed. That's a topic for another day. But you know what they do with folks like this, Ben, also? They attack the person, right, instead of the subject matter. So anybody now, they'll probably want to discredit Jermaine Jones, or they'll try to just ignore it and hope it all goes away or whatever, and hope it doesn't make a bigger stink. But you can see folks who have been brainwashed by the monopoly already attacking Jermaine Jones. Oh, Jermaine Jones, you're just saying this because you're salty or sour grapes. You know what I mean? Like, they'll attack the person instead of saying, hey, wait a second. Okay, what's going on here? Can we investigate a little bit? And a true journalist would do that. Have you seen any journalists distribute this now or go deeper on this? I doubt it. I doubt it will happen. If anything, they'll probably ignore it, because that's step one, is just ignore. Hopefully it goes away. If it doesn't go away, they'll smear the guy more than they've already smeared him. And it doesn't, and for folks in the audience, it doesn't matter if Jermaine Jones is a terrible coach, he's not good enough, his credentials, none of that matters. What matters is, look, they told him to shut up, otherwise he will never get another opportunity. That's what's most important.
What do you think it was about Jermaine Jones that they didn't want as part of their monopoly, or as part of their, you know, little exclusive club of MLS US soccer?
Well, I think we just finished talking about Tuchel, and Tuchel's a German. Jermaine Jones, German, also German-American, if you will, has that particular culture, a culture of, I don't know, being straight, saying things how they are, not playing the political pussy game. That's why they don't want that sort of culture inside.
Yeah. Very sad, man. Very sad. And like you said, I haven't seen anybody, any of the main media talking about this, and they're not going to, right? They're going to sweep this under the rug as best as they possibly can, or come out with a news story to try and smear this guy now.
Something else that's worthy of remark here, Ben, because he calls out Cindy Parlow-Cohn, the president of U.S. soccer, as did Tab Ramos a couple of days ago, but maybe people in the audience didn't really see that because the media, mainstream media, doesn't distribute these sorts of things. Tab Ramos, just like this gentleman, in some regards, said, hey, stop looking at Pochettino. How about you guys, or the coach generally, not Pochettino specifically, stop looking at the coach. Why don't you look at the people who hire the coach, and look at the people who hired the people who hire the coach? So basically pointing the finger at president of U.S. soccer. Great. Finally, somebody is starting to say, look a little bit deeper than the scapegoat, which is always the coach. The coach is always the fall guy, or the players are always the fall guys. But they don't go far enough, Benny, because just like Tab, Jermaine, in my serious opinion, they don't understand what's even deeper than Cindy Parlow-Cohn. Okay. They don't understand that that position is a position of a puppet. Cindy's a puppet. These people are puppets. The sporting director is a puppet. You got to ask the question, why are those puppets put in place? Why are they being selected in the first place? They said Cindy's not qualified, has no experience whatsoever. Like, why is she the U.S. soccer president? People aren't going to like this, but looks like a DEI hire to me. A nice little way to slip in, you know, hey, let's get a girl in there. Nobody's going to complain because this was peak woke era. Everybody's going to applaud it. Wow, diversity. Bravo, U.S. soccer. Amazing. This is so good. Yeah, woohoo, women rule. Sorry. Hey, if you got somebody like, I forgot her name, the president of SpaceX, right? Elon Musk's SpaceX. The main person there, aside from Elon, is a woman. But if you look at the credentials and you look what the remarkable career, I wish you could, can you look it up? I want to name her by name. I just remember it starts with a B. Guys, before we went on air here, I confessed to Benny, hey, I think I'm losing my memory or something, because I thought we had arranged to go live last night after the Argentina game. So that's why I can't remember. And I know SpaceX inside and out. It's so embarrassing. Gwen Shotwell. Absolutely. Remarkable human being. Outrageously competent and capable. And qualifications through the roof. She basically made SpaceX, right? And obviously hand in hand with Elon. So it has nothing to do with a prejudice that you guys, because you're going to try to attack me. Oh, Gary, you're misogynist. Fuck off. Has absolutely nothing to do with any of that. Cindy is not qualified.
Let's get into some audience comments. Yeah. Current mainstream media game plan is to flood the market with content in hopes that it will overpower the independent voices.
You know how all revolutions start and end up occurring is with just a handful of people, or just sometimes one person. And sometimes it just takes one book, for instance, historically speaking, to spark something massive.
All right, Gary. Hope you're ready here, man.
Yeah, tell me. They're going to say something stupid. Go ahead. People are so dumb.
Otters Vessel, 948. Three European teams in the semis and fourth out of four ranked Argentina. which is mostly German and Italian heritage. So what is all this BS about how great Latin American culture is?
Are you trying to say that Argentines aren't Latin American? What is this? We're all, everybody in the Americas is basically an immigrant from overseas.
But he's trying to say, because Argentina is the only South American team left, right?
Oh, so what is that?
What's all this BS about how great Latin American culture is?
Well, from a soccer perspective, it's plain as day. Who are typically the best players on the best clubs historically in Europe? Why are they worth tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars in many instances? Why do European clubs, the mega clubs, go trying to find talent in the Americas, in South America, the Latin Americans? And I'd like to know this person's ethnicity in a certain respect, because are you trying to say that? Because if you're a U.S. men's national team fan or a U.S. soccer fan or an American soccer fan or MLS or whatever, you're not even Latin American. You're not even wanted overseas. You think everybody knows you're trash. Canada couldn't win. The U.S. men's national team couldn't win. What are we talking about? And just look at, and statistically also, do some number crunching as to how many European nations there are and how many Latin American nations there are, and see if that proportion continues with World Cup success or international competition success. See what the representation looks like. If the representation is according to number of participants, the Americans, Latin Americans should never, ever compete.
Been seeing a lot of wokeness on how racist Argentina is. They're trying to bring the champs down with this, undermining their character. Why does the weak woke always hate winners?
They really do hate winners. They hate success. They hate it. They absolutely hate it. That's why this movement started, exists, and persists, and is now underground, and it will come back. It's not dead yet, because there is a huge level of envy that exists in people. And this movement gives them a conduit through which to express their envy and try to tear down the success of others and other groups and other demographics. It's hugely unfortunate. In many respects, I can understand it, because look, there's a huge disparity in wealth, as we all know, and people are struggling. If you look at here in the United States, things are not as good as they used to be. When my parents were growing up here in the States, had a job, one household income could buy a house, have two cars, pay for education, pay for food, could handle absolutely everything and still save some money. And you didn't even have to have a university degree to do that. That was my parents' generation. And now you fast forward now, you've got kids who are graduating college at 22, 23, 24, whatever. And good luck trying to buy a home, period. Even people who are graduating from university with higher degrees and have good professions, you're still going to have to have a dual income. You need both husband and wife, or two people making a shit ton of money to afford a home. And then you're indebted, and then you're a slave. So I don't blame this whole woke movement in a certain respect, because there's a lot of anger associated with what I just barely described.
All right, let's move on, Gary.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to talk about the quote unquote golden generation. With their roster lock status, agreed to giving the U.S. Women's National Team World Cup money. Do you think this would have happened if it wasn't for the culture Berhalter set?
I love that people are now calling it the bronze generation. When, I don't remember the reporter's name, but one of these media Muppets way back in the day, 4 years ago or 6 years ago, whenever it was, coined this term, the golden generation, and coined the prior generation, the lost generation. I'm like, you're fucking dumb. Golden generation, my butthole. So I'm glad people woken up. It's not a golden generation. It's same as it ever was. And then with respect to giving the U.S. Women's National Team World Cup money, ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Expand, Gary. Expand.
It's absolutely ridiculous that you have to split the men's World Cup earnings with the women's national team. I mean, why? Again, this is just socialist sociopaths, what is rightfully somebody else's. You get what you earn out in the marketplace. Period, end of story. Benny, if I make a product and you make a product, and my product sells way more than your product, why should I have to split everything 50-50 with you? Oh, because that's what's fair. Benny deserves it too. He worked hard. Okay, but he worked hard, but the market didn't want what he produced. What are we doing? Do you think this would have happened if the culture... So we're talking about two different things, right? One is the culture of the sporting side. And yeah, Berhalter destroyed... Berhalter's a puppet also. That prior generation got destroyed mentally, for sure.
Can you put this whole argument to bed, Gary, about the rebuttal to this, right? About the equal pay thing. It's like, oh, well, the women's team actually wins World Cups.
So what?
And they've been successful, and so they should be getting this money. But no, why have the women won, Gary? Because the rest of the world didn't care about soccer for the last fucking 50 years.
Correct. The women won and have always been number one for the most part because the rest of the world didn't give a shit about women's soccer. Never has. That's why. It's not because the women's coaches are better or the girls' youth soccer development is better than the boys' soccer development. Or it's not because Title IX and universities, you know, and giving, you know, women more resources and bigger platform and all that sort of stuff. It has nothing to do with any of that stuff. The rest of the world didn't give two fucks about women's soccer or girls' soccer. That's why the women are actually worse. The girls are actually worse than the boys. The women are actually worse than the men, development-wise, in every facet. They're terrible, absolutely terrible. Terrible decision making, just terrible, technically terrible everything. But they win because the rest of the world didn't care. That's why.
Yeah, now that the rest of the world does care, we've been seeing
they care this much, but they care this much. They still don't care as much as, you know, our women. They're not given the same treatment, the same things that our women are given. Sure. But yes, you're right, Benny. The rest of the world has started to throw a couple pennies, a couple nickels at the women's game. And look what's happened, which is what you were going to say, right?
Well,
the gap is closed.
Even with pennies and nickels, the gap is closing. Imagine they're throwing dollars.
Correct.
They're so far behind. All right, let's keep going here, Gary. Again, from this guy. I love how Gary hates VAR in every other game, except when Argentina wins a game.
That's not true at all. That's not true. That is absolutely false. Absolutely incorrect. And we said it in our last live stream. Because in the last live stream, what was the controversy again? Oh, the Lisandro Martinez, they canceled Egypt's goal, right? Because of a foul back then. I addressed this whole thing. I've always said VAR is shit, shocking. It shouldn't exist. If it does exist, it should exist for only the most minute of things. Like, did the ball go over the goal line? Yes or no? Okay, something like that. Fine, have VAR. Maybe the offside thing. Okay, have VAR. But all this other shit that comes along with it is nonsense. Why? Because it produces all this. It's still subjective. So I addressed this thing perfectly last time around. I talked about, hey, look what the Croatia goal with the sensor in the 90 some odd minute to tie the game or whenever it was, Benny, it was extra time, whatever. Bro, if Argentina had gotten away with what Portugal got away with in that match, people would say, oh, fucking rigged. Benny, VAR is stupid and this person is incorrect.
All right. Here's a real question, Gary. Average Joe says, Gary, how do we actually know that our national team is progressing? Is it where the players play? International results? How do we know these young players coming up will actually be better?
How do we actually know that our national team is progressing? I'm going to bring out my inner Zlatan, okay? It depends by who you mean by we. Because we, as if you're talking about fans will only know when there is an abundance of irrefutable evidence and data, okay? Because they can't see it with their eyes, right? It's not their day job. It's never been their day job. So they're not practitioners in the space. So they need hard data, which is why everybody here in the States, for the most part, relies on statistics. XG this, XA that, possession this, VAR that, referee rules here, referee rules there. Coach record here, coach record over there. Oh, this player plays on Juventus, so of course we're good. He plays on AC Milan. He plays on Fulham. Oh, we're good. We're good. They need hard data. They can't see with the eyes, okay? Which is what everybody was throwing at me, which was what everybody was throwing at people who were naysayers of the U.S. soccer program for years and years and years. Gary, we've made so much progress. What are you talking about? We have players in the Premier League. We have players in Serie A, et cetera, et cetera. And like, the players are what are mid. So the first question to address is, who is we? The fans will only know if, or the fans will think they know right? If you go to a World Cup and maybe you make a quarterfinal and barely get knocked out of a quarterfinal, or make a semifinal, and that's almost irrefutable to you, or win Copa America. Imagine if the U.S. men's national team plays in the next Copa America and they win Copa America with Brazil, with Argentina, with Uruguay, with Colombia, all that stuff. So it'll have to take something like that. Now, if I look at the other cohort people, practitioners, people who have been in the football world forever, we will claim that something is progressing when we see, I think when we see special players. I don't know how to answer this, Benny, because I was about to go down the open ecosystem route and say when we know that there's a meritocracy here. But footballistically,
how about just having one world-class player, man?
Yeah, but that could be a fluke, Ben. That could be a complete fluke. You need player after player after player after player. Look at the situation with Argentina now. I literally just said moments ago that Argentina sucks. Basically, it's like the 1990 Argentina. They're terrible. Switzerland was better. Switzerland would have won the game. I shouldn't say would have, because you never know, okay? But their chances of having beaten Argentina were obviously way off the charts if they didn't get that double yellow and had to play a man down. My point, if you look at Argentina's roster, you could claim a bunch of world-class players there. Lautaro Martinez is the captain, leading goal scorer in Serie A. The best, one of the best, if not the best, over there. Julian Alvarez, Champions League finalist, you know, is going to be sold probably over $100 million. Barca wants him badly, is trying to do all this underhanded thing to get him to come. Obviously, you have Messi. You have Cuti Romero is the captain of Tottenham, irreplaceable. You have Licha Martinez, the other center back. He's only 5'6", but he's a monster on one of the biggest clubs in England. Untouchable also. Look at all the players that Argentina has. And what do Argentinians like myself, right, say? They kind of suck. We're making it through because of heart, right? We're making it through because of things beyond just technique and tactics. And it's a mentality sort of thing and a little bit of luck, frankly speaking. So look at how I'm viewing it. Look at how the Argentine public are viewing that team with a load of world champions. And then you want me to say that U.S. soccer is progressing? You're gonna need a bunch of Lautaros, Julian Alvarez's, Cuti Romero's, and then now it's irrefutable.
I know you don't like to talk about goalies, Gary, but I think you said this before the World Cup. Having a world class goalie or a great goalie is critical if you want to actually make a deep run in this tournament. And I mean, look at Emi Martinez, brother. How many massive saves did he make last night? That Matt Friis would have just, I mean, you can never know. Maybe Matt Friis has the game of his life, but Emi Martinez is levels ahead of anything that we've ever had as goals. I mean, sure, we had Tim Howard, but I'd still pick Emi Martinez over him. And that's just one position. That's a goalie, man.
And we all kind of admit that he's not the best. You know what we say? We have a decent goalkeeper. He played out of his mind in 2022. Awesome. But players can peak, you know, and be the best for one season, and then they're mid the rest of the way. Because earlier in the tournament, Dibu Martinez was shocking, kind of scary that he was in goal. He wasn't good.
Last night he was huge, though. And also, dude, look at his distribution, man.
Yeah.
Never going to see Matt Turner or Matt Friis hit pinging a ball like that on a fucking dime, bro.
Yeah.
Every time, wherever he wants it, dude.
Yeah.
So
man.
Argentinians are saying like, yeah, this guy's okay. Wolf. What would they be saying about Matt Friis, bro?
Before the Switzerland game, there were a lot of Argentines coming out, you know, and little reels here, there, commentary and analysts and pundits. They're like, and Dibu, please, before the Switzerland game, please, can you please start making some saves? Please start making some saves, because if you don't make any saves, so everybody knew that he's not the guy. He did good. We see reality, Benny. Like Tuchel sees reality and we speak reality. This is how it is. I think we're screwed against England.
You think so?
Oh yeah, man. I think the luck runs out there.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say you might not have another World Cup if Dibu doesn't make that save in the last, what was it, overtime? France gets that through ball in, and I'm talking about 2022.
Right, right.
That save where he's fucking, that was incredible, man. So no matter what happens, his legacy is secured. What's your biggest learning from this World Cup? I think you meant, what's the biggest thing you learned from this World Cup?
Yeah, I think this World Cup has shown even more so than in the past, that the gap between big teams and small teams has gotten narrower. So I gave this reel, this whole speech about, I started analyzing World Cups in 1986 when I was like, whatever I was, 8 years old, 10 years old, and deconstructing things ever since then, systematically, like crazy. And there was a huge gap between big teams and small teams. And over the years, especially in the past 10 years, that gap has gotten really, really small.
All right, here's another question. Would you agree the overall quality of play at the World Cup has declined? The star players still shine, but the length of club season has increased tournament size, and increased tournament size has had an impact. Additionally, many national teams seem to have lost their cultural identity and their style of play that they were each known for. Sorry, a bit of a question and prompt. Hope it makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm going to presume I understand what is meant by quality of play. I've kind of seen good quality of play, if I'm being sincere. I've seen, because usually you see national teams not operating as good as club teams, right? Because club teams, the players are all together for every day, for years and season over season over season. The coach is there with them all the time. So they're like a well-oiled machine. And then historically, when you see national teams play, you're like, oh, this is a complete disordered jumble of spaghetti. And it's like a pickup game. And that's what I would kind of call lower quality, right? Or low quality. But what I've seen in this World Cup, our teams are incredibly organized. They have been quite clean on the ball. And I do see an actual team, and I don't see pickup soccer. I don't see them just trading punches and it's a pickup game. I see unity in both squads. So I don't think the overall quality of play in this World Cup has declined. I would probably argue the opposite of that.
How about the cultural identity? I know this is something we talked about it before. Like you said, Brazil doesn't have Jogo Bonito anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, they still keep possession, but they don't look like the same Spain as we've seen in years past. Like, what about the cultural identity stuff?
No, I think the only one who has lost it is Brazil. But Benny, you mentioned Spain. And yeah, Spain is not like the Spain when they won the World Cup, because they had a true golden generation then. Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, Fabregas, you name them. You go down the whole roster. But they're still playing like that. That is still their identity. They still want to hold on to the ball. And if there's anything that's different with this Spain, is they actually have a legitimate potential global superstar who is a difference maker, who is a dribbler, who is a flashy player, kind of like a Brazilian type player in Lamine Yamal. That is the only difference. And that maybe is why there's a little bit of a tweak from Spain in the past. So the identity is intact there. The identity of France is, in my opinion, intact also. I mean, this is how France plays ever since they've become successful. Ever since the Zidane days, they have these outrageously athletic players, you know, wing players, and very deadly on the attack and a little bit soft in defense. That's France. Well, who's the other side? Argentina? Identity's intact. Maybe it's a little bit broken, one could say, because it's clear that the whole team is structured for Messi. Maybe that's a little bit different, but the identity's intact. And England, I would say, has been intact relative to the past 4, 5, 6 years. I don't know.
Even though they're already out, I'm just curious, what's Mexico's identity, Gary?
I was just thinking about Mexico before you asked me. And same old, same old. People are, guys, just chill. This is just locker room talk. This is how people speak. When we would play pickup games, like I've said many a times, with all my South American friends and my Mexican friends, they'd come over to the park, would play pickup every single week. They played like little ratitas running around. Like, seriously, like little ratitas. They're all over the field, okay? First off, yes, they're a little bit more diminutive in physique. Fine. And they're like energizer bunnies all across, but they're a little bit wild, okay? And they have little teeth and claws that are going to come get you. That's kind of their identity. It's just, it sounds bad, but that's how we've always described them. And my Mexican friends were like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I wish you guys could see how many comments we've got in our DMs that says, Gary hates Mexicans.
Don't hate Mexican.
All right, here's another one. Kick it with Katie. Thanks for being here, Katie. Do you think the expansion was a success for the sport? Expansion of the World Cup, I'm assuming. Is that what you mean?
I'm assuming the number of teams?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. I think it was a commercial success for sure. From a sporting perspective, yeah, I think it's fine. It's just what I didn't like is because of the expansion, you get all these third place teams going through. And so the group phase is has been a little bit less exciting for me than other cycles.
Right. No, in other World Cups, it felt like if you lose one group stage game, then
massive trouble.
Yeah, you're not officially done, but you can't lose a group stage. Here, it was like, all right, we lost, but we'll still be fine, you know?
Yeah.
People are saying like FIFA is just going to keep expanding the tournament until China and India can qualify because they want that demographic of 2 billion people.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they? China, what's up with China, bro? Why don't we ever see China at the World Cup? I'm sure somebody in the comments knows something about them, but you would think a country of that many people and the resources that they have, you would think that they could produce something.
Yeah, no, I have no idea.
I don't think I've ever seen a China national team game. Have you?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Gary, what are the realistic chances the USA hosts in 2038 and it gets expanded to 64 teams? Pros and cons for each. Is it coming home again?
I wouldn't be surprised, Ben. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes to the U.S. again. If not 2038, 2042. We've been saying this forever, Benny, that the U.S. has the most lucrative soccer ecosystem in the world, perhaps. Because people have always been saying, oh, we're not a soccer country, not a soccer country, not a soccer country. That's why we suck. Nobody cares about soccer here. And it's not true at all. We are among the biggest, if not the biggest, soccer market on planet Earth. And it was already proven in 1994 when we hosted it here. That 1994 World Cup held the record to today, right, for the most attended World Cup in history ever. People fill stadiums here, guys. We have a huge soccer demographic. So it's not a coincidence that every time we have like the Gold Cup, it's here. Every time Mexico is going to play a game, sometimes they don't even play it in Mexico. They play it here. Why? More money, more stadium capacity, more everything. It's not a surprise that Copa America started being held here. It's not a surprise that the first Club World Cup was held here. Now this World Cup, here. The next Club World Cup, who knows? They're probably going to do it here. It's not a surprise that some clubs in La Liga, some clubs in other leagues want to play league games here in the United States. Why would you play La Liga games here in the United States or Premier League games here in the United States? Or why? Because this, and we have a huge soccer loving population that's going to pay a shit ton of this to go to the matches.
So where do you think that narrative comes from that the U.S. doesn't have a soccer market and we don't have soccer culture here? Where is that from?
Well, when people fail, you look for excuses. And MLS is a failure, and the leagues here have been a failure. And so they look for excuses. They don't look at themselves to say, oh, we suck, right? That's why we're not good at this soccer thing. No, they say, well, we suck because nobody supports this sport here. Nonsense. MLS, which is absolute trash, gets a shit ton of people to attend in the stadiums. USL, who is the second division here, gets a shit ton of people relative to other second divisions in other countries. And don't point at me at only the top three leagues in the world. Oh, Gary, German second division gets high attendance. Oh, Gary, the English championship. No, look at Portugal. Look at Holland. Look at all the other countries that aren't the top five, right, leagues. Look at their second divisions. In our second division, has more attention and is more populated than they are. And to boot, there's no promotion relegation. USL, it's not like USL teams can ever get promoted or relegated, which would drive way more interest. So where does it come from, Benny? This whole narrative of, oh, it's a niche sport, nobody cares. It comes from MLS and its media muppets blaming the ecosystem, right? That there's no support for soccer.
Does it give you hope that people are recognizing and calling out people who make the same excuses every 4 years? Best athletes, pay to pay, soccer culture, the future is bright, etc.
It's encouraging that there have been more people who believe this sort of stuff first and now they don't believe it anymore. I'm seeing people who used to believe the problem was we didn't have athletes, the problem was pay to play, the problem was it's a niche sport. And now they've learned and they're like, you know what? That's bullshit. And they're calling out the bullshit. So when you have a conversion like that, that gives me a lot of encouragement and hope for sure. But as you've all seen, we're fighting a media machine because look at how they have flipped now on Pochettino. They're literally trying to light Pochettino on fire. Alexi Lalas is trying to light Pochettino on fire. That parasite of a so-called journalist, Doug McIntyre, tries to light Pochettino on fire.
All right, Gary, let's end with this here. Obviously, the semifinal matchups, France, Spain, England, Argentina. I think before the World Cup, you did say you would predict a final of France and Argentina.
I said that?
I think you did. Yeah. I know you said France.
France for sure. I never put my eggs in Argentina's basket, man. Okay, it wasn't.
Right. But give us your predictions of who, now we have this, who are we going to. Yeah.
This is so agonizing. I'm going to tell you my team rankings first. The best is France. The second best is Spain. The third best is England. The fourth best among this group is Argentina. That are, you know how Americans talk about this idiotic power ranking thing? Okay. Just to give it in terms that people understand, those are my quote unquote power rankings. That doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. I don't even want to say a sense because I don't know many, but I'm going to pick two teams. Spain beats France.
Oof.
Spain beats France. England scores first against Argentina. Argentina ties it 1-1. We go to penalties. Argentina wins in penalties. There, I'll be optimistic.
Damn. Well, why are you saying that Spain is going to beat France? If you're saying that France is the best team, and by the way, for the audience, I don't know if you guys follow us on Instagram, then you saw a couple of days ago, Gary says that this France team in this World Cup is the best World Cup team of any World Cup. Obviously, you gave the context that. What was the first one that you were conscious, Gary? What did you say? 1980-something?
86. 86.
So Gary says that this France team is the best World Cup team that there has ever been. So now tell us why you think Spain will be France.
I'm just going to give you the same thing I said in those reels. The only way to beat this France is having possession of the ball. And I think Spain has the capability of holding possession of the ball. You can't bunker against France. You can't press France. You can't go toe-to-toe with them. I attack you, you attack me, I attack you, you attack me. You will lose in all those circumstances. So the only way is to defend with the ball, have the ball. Spain has the capability of holding the ball. And they also have the experience of playing this French team many times, right? In the Euros, they have all this experience. So they know what they're up against. And they've been successful. So all those things combined, and Lamine Yamal has not been impactful from a goal scoring perspective in this World Cup. I think he might go off in this game. It's just a sensation I have, Benny.
Gotcha. I'm going to go with France wins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to say this, Gary, but I think England's going to win versus Argentina, and I think France will end up taking it home. So let's come back to the tournament, and we'll see if our predictions came true.
Ben, if France beats Spain, it's over. They won the World Cup.
100%.
There's no way. Anything can happen, right? Roulette spin of the wheel, it can land on 0-0. But there's no, England's not beating France.
But does Argentina have a better chance of beating France?
I think so, yeah. Even though, and I've told you, Argentina sucks, but they have a better chance. I know that math doesn't math to people. How can you say a team sucks, but they will beat the other team? Because soccer isn't math, guys. I'm sorry.
All right. I was going to end it there, but there's one more question. So why not, Gary? Gary, how do we ride the line of trying to grow the sport for many fans, but also stay critical of the closed ecosystem? Because it feels so bleak at times with the problems trying to explain to others. What's up, question, man?
Well, the sport is going to grow irrespective of anything. So kids are going to play, pro teams are going to exist and continue to expand. The sport is going to grow because there's a lot of demand for the sport here. But we have to educate everybody who's new and not new as to the cancer that is MLS and the cancer that is a closed ecosystem. We just have to continue educating them. I mean, what's the question again? How do we ride the line of trying to grow the sport? What do you see? This is the thing. What do we mean by trying to grow the sport? Because I'll tell you what the MLS media Muppets tell everybody. To grow the sport, we have to tell people to go to MLS games and tune in and watch MLS. Or sometimes they'll even say, oh, it's okay if it's USL or something like that. Just go to your local matches. Support local, they'll say. That isn't the proper mechanism for growing the sport.
Last one, Gary.
Yeah. Cool.
What is your take on USL? It doesn't open the ecosystem like you've said, but is it a start? So I'm assuming that they're speaking of when USL is supposedly going to implement promotion relegation, which wouldn't be true promotion relegation, but what are your thoughts, Gary?
Yeah, if they do quote unquote promotion relegation, it isn't true promotion relegation. True promotion relegation is an open ecosystem. I'll leave it there because people can do their homework if they want. My take on it is I'll give you two versions. Take number one is that it could be good because you're introducing the public, the fans, to quote unquote pro rel here in the States at the professional level, which has never existed. Pro rel as in teams win, they go up, teams lose, they can go down. So that's a good thing. Will it drive excitement? I think it'll drive more excitement within USL. Yeah, because imagine if you're a USL club in a particular city and your particular club, it's coming up to the end of the season and it looks like you're USL one and it looks like you're fighting for one of the top two spots, you know, in the league table, and you're going to go to USL championship next year. Those communities, those cities, those fans are going to be super excited about that. So they're going to go to the stadium towards that, especially towards the end of the season, which is great. And the opposite is also true. Imagine if you're in a community and you're being threatened with relegation, you're going to feel it a lot more because being among the last place teams actually means something now. There's something on the line. So from that vantage point, it's good, Benny. The other side, which is bad, is that if it doesn't generate a huge amount of interest, it doesn't blow up, right? Which is what true promotion relegation would do. It would blow up the soccer ecosystem here. It'd be incredible. And this isn't it. Then MLS, the monopoly and its Muppets, will point at the USL fake pro rel and say, see, USL, it's not growing anything. It's not doing anything. They aren't getting huge TV deals because of it. They aren't building stadiums like MLS stadiums. It's a failure. Pro rel doesn't produce anything. So they'll use it as a referendum on that pro rel does not actually work.
Seems like the monopoly always finds a way to win, huh?
Well, see, that's the thing. Outside of physics, outside of mathematics, outside of the hard sciences, things aren't black and white. And so you can always create a narrative based on selected points, data points, and create a whole narrative around it. And if you have a media machine pushing a bullshit narrative, then it sounds like a legit narrative. ¿Qué más, Benny? So what I'm hearing, Gary,
is we need to get the interest in the USL Pro Rel simulation to blow up. Message received.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle because it's not true promotion relegation, but we'll see how it goes. And furthermore, who knows if they even do it? USL has been talking about implementing Pro Rel for years now. For years, and nothing has materialized. Oh, we're in talks. Oh, we're going to do it in 2027 or 2028. I already forgot supposedly when they placed the date. But these are all just words. Nothing has actually happened.
Will MLS finally fail when Messi retires?
No. MLS cannot fail. It is a monopoly. It doesn't fail, and it doesn't depend on attendance. It doesn't depend on TV deals. It doesn't depend on all the things that you think it depends on. It can survive basically indefinitely, forever.
Okay, obviously this is a question for Brian, but maybe you have some insight.
Sure.
If this is possible, Gary. Potential for an inside look at the day-to-day as AB Alta manager with Brian on 343.
The answer is no, and it's related to how we opened up our episode today, in my opinion, Benny, with Jermaine Jones's comments. For those who joined late, Jermaine Jones basically confessed on X yesterday that he's been effectively blackballed, or he was threatened with being blackballed if he didn't shut up about certain things that occur at the Federation and MLS level. And it's something I've been teaching you guys forever now, that that's how they operate. So Brian's in the system, right? So Brian needs to be Brian and do his thing. And we're over here and we're doing our thing.
There you go. All right. 343. Are you guys going to do a live Q&A about youth system again for coaching education?
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
We can do that. Yeah. I don't know. When would be a good time? You know, I'm presuming, Jose, you're a coach. When would it be most useful to you? Like when your season is over, mid-season, beginning of the season, or it doesn't matter at all?
All right. I had Gary Tab Ramos just said that Cindy Parlow has to step down.
Yeah. Like I said, right. I'm glad that more people are not being so superficial and scapegoating the coach or scapegoating the players. Look at who hires the people who hire the coach. You're not going deep enough.
All right. I know you touched on USL a little bit, but MLS Next Pro versus USL Championship, which is better for youth development?
Yeah, this is a no-brainer. It's USL. It doesn't even have to be USL Championship, USL League One as well. It's a no-brainer. And the main reason, too, is if you look at MLS second teams, they don't draw crowds. There's no pressure on them whatsoever. They're all a bunch of kids playing against a bunch of other kids. There aren't grown men who have massive experience overseas in Europe, grown men who have experience in Mexico, who have experience in MLS itself. You know what I mean? Like seasoned veterans, professional footballers are playing in USL Championship. In MLS Next Pro, that's not really the case. It's a bunch of MLS Academy kids playing each other.
All right. Puto 69 says,
I love that. I love that. That's a good name. That's very creative.
Do you have experience coaching women's or girls' youth soccer? Yes, you actually do, huh, Gary?
Yeah, there was a couple. Well, I'm not the head coach, right? Brian was the head coach of a girls' team for 3 years, was it, Benny? I don't remember if it was 2 or 3 years. I think it was 3 years. And obviously, I'm there by his side day in and day out for those 2 or 3 years.
All right. I'm just going to throw some comments out here now.
Sure, sure. Let's do a lightning round.
All right. State of U.S. soccer is depressing, makes it tough to want to invest in the game here when all paths lead to nightmare bullshit.
This is true. That's why you don't see more investment. I would invest. I would start a club myself, Ben. We've talked about this many a times, but what's the point? Because they'll just destroy your they'll destroy you.
What would you call it? 343?
Yeah, why not? We have a long history. We actually would be a club. See, this is a club. This would actually be a club. You know what we represent. You literally know what we represent. What does LA Galaxy represent?
Nothing. The Stars.
Right? It doesn't represent anything.
The thing I'm sad about with the potential for the Open Pyramid is that MLS will find a way to keep their ownership structure even in an Open Pyramid, but it would be a chance to fight it.
You know what's interesting? A lot of folks, this is a really good thing we should touch on, Benny. I think maybe it would be fine if MLS kept its structure, the structure being that MLS is a single entity. It basically effectively owns all the teams. The teams aren't individual separate clubs themselves. MLS runs them, operates them, owns them. And folks say, well, how, Gary, people paid $100 million to be part of MLS, have an MLS franchise. You can't tell them that they'll be relegated and lose all this money in their investment. They wouldn't lose all that money and all that investment if they got relegated. Why? Because they don't like own that particular team. They own a piece of equity in MLS itself. They all share, right? They're all one club. They're all part of the same team. So if one of their teams got relegated to USL Championship, let's say, whoever operates that franchise isn't out of their $100 million investment or $50 million or $20 million, or nowadays it's reportedly, $300-$500 million. That $300-$500 million was to buy a piece of MLS. That's what they purchased. So could they keep the same structure? Yeah, keep the same structure. Fine. But you don't get to have your franchises stay in Division One forever. If they suck, they should go down and somebody else should take its place. San Antonio, El Paso Locomotive, you name whatever USL franchise, Tampa Bay Rowdies, whatever.
All right, Gary, we're going to keep going on the rapid fire here. Even though this one is an entire episode, I think we actually have done an episode on this. Is it possible to still allow kids in America to play multiple sports and still have a chance to play soccer at a high level? Obviously not under the current ecosystem. What do you mean by high level? Right? Because if by high level, you mean play D1 college soccer, play MLS, and maybe. But if you want to be world class, then I think. Yeah. What do you
you're
think?
You're not going to be world class. You're not going to be top level if you're splitting your time, energy, and effort amongst different sports. You just aren't. And soccer is indeed unique because it's a foot head coordination thing instead of eye coordination thing. So you have to start early is number one. And can you play multiple sports growing up? Yeah, you can, but eventually you're just going to have to focus on football. Otherwise, it's just not going to work.
Look at Michael Jordan when he went to the MLB. Shocking. Shocking baseball.
Well, but he still played. But see, you can do multiple sports in those other sports. You can be a Bo Jackson. Fine. No, you aren't. Bo Jackson just wanted to pick up soccer, you know, and no chance, man.
I agree. Let's end it there.
Okay.
Audience, thank you guys for spending your Sunday with us. Continue to share the word. Like, comment, subscribe. Every little bit helps. You guys are the best. Anything else you want to say, Gary?
No, that's all, man. That's I think it would be kind of poetic if it was France versus Argentina. But very scary. I think France will run us over, but it'll be a poetic sort of final.
All right. Puto69 gets the last word today. Love the channel.
Thanks, Puto.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant, possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.